Welcome to another podcast of What the Privacy. And we've got a great guest, Jennifer Saunders from California. I'm going to say one of my favorite people, but I do want to big up her ego. She's the products and commercial privacy attorney for the weather company out in California. Focuses on B2B and B2C technology companies. And she's currently, as I said, with the weather company, but as the assistant general counsel. Weather company's really an interesting organization. Yes, it provides forecasts, weather forecasts, but it does it across the board to aviation, media, and consumers. Really interesting company. What's really interesting about what we're talking about today is really around ad tech. You're a bit of an expert in this area, the complexity of ad tech and the issues around compliance, what you can do with the data, how you collect data, all the laws around it on protecting organizations and individuals. So what I had to do before the call, Jennifer, I'll let you speak in a minute. Ad tech is an overarching term that describes the tools and software that advertisers reach to reach audiences and deliver a measurable digital advertising campaign. It's a spaghetti bowl of complexity. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for the introduction. Ad tech in the advertising technology environment is extremely complex, and people would hear about this in the news every time you hear about the state, the national GDPR, state privacy laws, California, the health data laws, and all of those. Those are generally coming around ad tech, designing to protect consumer data. And you'll hear about it with the sales to data brokers, like the terms that people will hear in the out in their ecosystem. You'll hear about these prohibiting sales to data brokers, which are a party in the ad tech ecosystem. Publishers, which is what we are. We have an app and websites. We have several apps and websites. So we're considered a publisher. And what we're doing is publishing content, the weather data and relevant editorial content. And we're moving into additional content of interest, but we are supported by ads. That's one of our big revenue sources. We have other revenue sources as well, but ads is one of them. And so delivering those ads and how relevant those ads are to you is based on how we use ad tech or how we play in the ad tech ecosystem.
How do you ensure that ad tech processes are compliant with the evolving privacy laws? And how similar is it to data brokerage? There is a defined difference, isn't there?
So a data broker is a third party that takes data that they get from. So we, any website app that you go to is tracking you in various manners. You see those cookie notices that pop up that everyone just clicks through and says yes to or says no to all. Understand why you're doing that, because you are affecting the functionality of the website and what you're getting from that. So if you say no to all cookies, they're going to not collect data that is not relevant to their providing the service. So data that they might want to get about you in order to deliver you content of interest, such as ads based on, for you, it would be bicycles, right? For me, it would also be bicycles, which to me is more interesting than getting ads on dog food. But you might like a dog food ad. But that data that's being collected, those are via the cookies or via the consents you give. We collect it on the websites. You can also get that data from public resources. You're going to get it from different websites, different platforms, as we call them. We know that Facebook collects these. You keep seeing Facebook in the news. They're collecting them across, it's called cross-behavioral advertising. You're collecting data of users, not just on a website, that's somewhat relevant, but what is their behavior as they go across the web? All these different platforms, what do they click on? What drives them from, you know, how long do they stay somewhere? What are their interests? And that is all collected across the entire web ecosystem. Data brokers are the ones who aggregate that. So data brokers are ones where they collect it from myriad sources. So from the DMV, from Experian, from our website, from other ad tech, and they create what's called audience segments or profiles. So you or I will be in hundreds of different segments. I might be a woman of X age that lives in Northern California that seems to be physically active, that had purple hair. I mean, that could be the segments range of how targeted they are, and how that affects you is then what content. So is it advertising? Commercial advertising products can be influence, politicians using it. We saw that historically. Like, think of all the content that's delivered to you is based on these types of this type of tracking and building profiles on users. And it's good and bad.
Have you tried accepting all cookies on every site you've done in a day? I did this the other day because I was trying to work out how much data was stored in the browser. So I did it the other day and I was stunned. It was 123 megs worth of data that when I cleansed at the end of the day, I just wanted to see how much information was it. And I go on quite a few sites. Either I've seen an advert, it's mainly about hunt wheels because I'm interested in buying a new pair, or other information where I go on a media website and just click accept cookies. I did it via VPN, so I was trying to bounce off two different countries. It's 123 meg on my cache browser. And I was thinking, bloody hell, that's a lot. What's the main rules you use when you're looking at advertising or using the software tools and the compliance on ad tech?
The main tools that we use or the main rules?
Main rules.
The main rules. So you're going to look at, as you know, there's a myriad, and you're just trying to make me say it, so you won't have to say it, but you've got GDPR.
You've already said it. You said it in the first 2 minutes.
Because you know so that one spins me up. Only because.
For the listeners, Jennifer and I always play GDPR bingo because I think we violently agree GDPR in some ways can be a hindrance, but we always play GDPR bingo and you lost it. Anyway, let's talk about GDPR.
GDPR bingo, it is privacy is dead. And so GDPR gives a little bit of a false sense of security in my view, but we have to comply with it. And so you'll get attorneys when we're talking and we're advising on compliance, GDPR, then you've got California's, which is very strict. And that is California Privacy Protection Act as amended. CCPA is amended, and the correct term is CCPA. I can't stand when people call it CPRA. And then you've got just a ton of other state privacy laws. Every state has their different flavor, slightly different flavor in the US, but basically because the internet is across states, it makes it extremely challenging to decide if you want to try to comply by regime. We call them regimes, each state, or do you want to just set a baseline for the US? So companies have to face that compliance. And so what you're looking at is what rights do these give users? What do we have to do to comply? And so they give, you know, all of these laws basically state you have to disclose to users what you're doing, what data you're collecting, and how you use it. And that's where you come up with those 1,000-page single-spaced privacy policies that I'm literally still on my investigative journey to find a person who's not directly involved in privacy law who has read one of these. No one reads them. Fair enough. But and they also, the disclosures within them are not clear to users. So the requirement is that you clearly disclose to users what you're collecting and how you're using data. But if you read those terms, they say things like we collect analytics data to better provide our services. It's very broad terms. They pretty much all say the same thing, but they use about 60
pages. Nobody. The consumer doesn't read them.
Nobody. Big fat waste of time. Can't stand them. This is my view as a privacy attorney. And most privacy attorneys will say we have to comply with all of these requirements, but do they really do anything to help the end user? GDPR is good in that it brought the issue of privacy forward and people are thinking about it more. And now it's much more in the public arena, as you say, in media, that people think about privacy. That's what GDPR offers. People click through privacy policies. You don't really have a choice other than to not use the platforms. Maybe some minor choices, accept all cookies or pick your cookies. Under the new frameworks, you're going to have a multi-layered cookie notice option, including knowing exactly which vendors we're providing data to. On our compliance side, this is a nightmare. This is taking us months with full teams of engineering and compliance people to implement. There's vendors that help you comply with this, obviously. So you've got the big CMPs, consumer management platforms, depends on what they call themselves. We integrate with them, but we have to go set up all of our consents, what data we're collecting.
Only big companies can afford to do that, can't they? If you think about an SMB, they haven't got open house chance on making sure they're compliant, in my view. Do you think that all the California rules, I'm digressing here slightly, the rules that you work in within California, do you think companies will leave California to go to another state because it's easier?
No. So I'm based in California. Andrew's right. Weather Company is based in Atlanta, Georgia. And again, it's a national, it's a worldwide site. So where you're based, it's where you offer your services. So would the company not offer their services in California? No, because we're not overly onerous compared to others. I mean, we are overly onerous compared to other states. It's a bit of an annoyance. But the web, again, it's virtual, it's out there, it's cross-border. So you can try to shut off California, but I don't see companies doing that as practice. And to your point, it is extremely hard. there was intent around that to get to that. There are, if you look at the intent behind some of the laws and how they are implemented. So some are based on you must be of a certain size or a certain revenue or have a certain number of users. That's California. Yeah. Some laws don't. So they apply across the board. Colorado state law, it was designed to make it more friendly to SMBs. But again, unless you're like a small retailer who wants to keep your site local or it's only a relevant service locally, you could also not do things like just not collect that user data and provide a service and not advertise. That's going to take you out of the public eye.
So do you know why, how important California is to the world? Is it the fourth biggest economy in the world? It's bigger than Germany. That's massive, isn't it? So when everyone says, oh, you're talking about California again, it's the fourth biggest economy in the world. I think Texas is the sixth.
California is one of the reasons we did not pass federal privacy regulation because it would have been a baseline and California thought it was too low of a baseline. So that was one of the pushbacks on federal regulation and now we'll probably never have it. But California has a huge impact on other companies, as you said, as does GDPR. So most companies list those two as the big baselines that they comply with. But again, rolling out California requirements across the nation means we have to give users, the consumers, a lot more notice and option, an easy option. So like we said, privacy policies are buried. And as a person, even as an attorney, I have a challenge understanding a lot of these. And I'm a privacy attorney. The user might think they know what these say, but I can explain to you that that's not what it says. We had a friend, as you said, in Clubhouse, who recently said she received a happy birthday from one of her, a company that, I don't know, maybe a retailer. And she was offended because she had not given them her information for the purpose of wishing her happy birthday. I will guarantee the privacy policy. She gave them her birthday and that the privacy policy said, we use it. We may use your data in any manner to support our services. And they're going to consider marketing you and saying happy birthday as part of their services, right? So that's something you may not think about, but it's covered.
In some cases, the terms and conditions, you need an above average brain to understand the terms and conditions. I'm just going to mention TikTok, which is quite relevant in the US. To understand their terms and conditions, I think you need to be university trained, not in a bachelor's, but a bloody master's. It's so complex and so gray.
Oh, don't start me on this. I'm going to have to totally push back on that one. You need a master's to understand Meta's terms of service, and you would probably need 6 PhDs to get through Google's. And if you see how connected Google is, your email is connected to every site you go to and Google advertising, those guys are like that. I don't know. They're like air. And if you want to opt out of any service that offers, Google is one of the main players in the ad tech ecosystem. Obviously, they play a lot of different roles. They're huge. They're basically it. And if a user wants to opt out of receiving those ads, they have to go to Google and try to navigate how to opt out. But think of all the Google services that you're using. So as an attorney, I can't even figure this out, like our agreements with Google's and what users would need to do. It's unbelievable. And Meta is similar, Facebook. Their terms will send you 6 different directions. You know, every time you click on something, they use triple negatives. They're known for this. They have to use videos and how-to guides to understand their privacy policy. Admittedly, this might have been almost 2 years ago. We did a review of TikTok's privacy policy there, an earlier one. It was maybe 13 pages double-spaced. It was so short and clear and to the point. Now, to understand what they're saying, they are definitely taking data off of all of your devices, anything you connect with, et cetera. But so are all of these other platforms. They're not collecting any more than any platform. And they're very clear. They ended every paragraph and anything else we can get. And we're going to use it in any way that's not illegal. So if you think about that, that's the broadest ever. They've since updated their privacy policy and made it more along the lines of Facebook's and those guys.
I do think it's ironic you're trying to kick TikTok out of the States when Google and Meta are kind of just trying to protect their own revenue, in my opinion. And why people are using mobile telephones, government mobile telephones for social media, beggars belief. In my day, you had a work phone, you stuck to doing work on it, and that was it. You isolated it.
I agree on both. No, I want to quickly hit on that one. I agree on both of those. I think all these companies equally disclose what they're doing. Again, the data is for sale. China can buy it, Russia can buy it, Iran can buy it. Our government doesn't even have to buy it. They just tell the companies they want it, or they can buy it. Also, just to call out, a lot of the U.S. state privacy laws exempt government and nonprofits from compliance. And if you think of government. So, okay, no government agencies have to comply with this, your DMV and everybody else. And nonprofits are exempted from a lot of them. That's slightly absurd because that would be your churches. But yeah, I think not all states, because remember, every state's different, but a lot of the states, and I think California, but I have to look it up, exempt nonprofits. So a lot of organizations get nonprofit status that you would be surprised about. I think the basketball leagues are nonprofits or football leagues. I forget. But again, just think of who's not complying with it. And so if you've got that much non having to comply with these, what are we really protecting? What's the intent?
So which is a good segue for the next question I'm going to ask you, the introduction of SEC security rules in December 2023. And I think that's made a big difference to the way that organizations have to report a material breach, whatever the word material means, within, is it 4 working days? The reason why I say it's a big difference, I've noticed on our RSS feed, our news feed, a lot more notifications coming in of breaches, loads of notifications. I mean, you must agree with me, again, that it's made a big difference.
So there's a couple of things there to unpack.
Is that yes? Is that yes?
You're seeing the uptick in those, and also I see this on just regular media feeds. But there's a couple of things you're unpacking there. Who has enforcement rights or rights to bring an action under privacy laws? And as you say, SEC, you know, government agencies, who has the right? So there are under state laws, U.S. state laws. If there's a private right of action, you want to be very careful because, as you said, there's plaintiffs' law firms that will come after you. They just love drumming up business. So if there's a private right of action, but then you have to define how I don't want to put ourselves on a radar again, but you have to see what are the requirements for that. So there are different requirements. So there's a private right of action under the CCPA, but it's only for security breaches. So if there was a security breach, then and a user was harmed, theoretically they could bring claims under CCPA. SEC, you're seeing the larger agencies, there's turf wars, both around privacy. So FTC governs privacy, and they're starting to bring privacy claims in addition to states under their unfair and deceptive advertising. They're saying that your disclosures, they were deceptive. So you saw some big cases there with GoodRx, the health companies that were saying they weren't selling your data when they were. And what you're bringing up is the SEC breach notifications. So again, some of these agencies are, again, it's existing authority and they're expanding it into what people are saying are new areas. And the SEC of disclosing it within a certain number of days is slightly challenging because what is the trigger? What's the determination of breach? What are the triggers that start that 4-day requirement? And then what is material? And everybody was up in arms as to what is material? What is material? Who knows? And you do have guidance. Look at what is considered material to the SEC, and it's what would a reasonable investor want to know in making a decision? What would impact their decision? So that's generally what's material. But now, as you said, it's been going on over time and there's much more direction around what is material. We're seeing people err on the side of over-disclosing now is part of the argument. They're saying, are they disclosing in an attempt to be overly cautious? And does that dilute the...
I don't think it dilutes it. See, the thing is, though, is that we only know what we know. So obviously, when we load data up, 99% of the compromised credentials we see from third-party websites where companies have been involved, 99% aren't reported. There's a lot of things we don't know out there.
Absolutely.
So if you're thinking it hasn't opened up the floodgates, what should happen? The whole dam should fall down. The whole Hoover Dam should fall down. That's what should happen. And then you won't be able to cope. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic, a cyber pandemic. And again, to quote Confucius or Donald, what's he called? The US Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, is it? We only know what we do know. We don't know what we don't know. There's a lot more out there, Jennifer, that's quite frightening, which is not being reported. I think SEC's great. SEC? I should say SEC.
SEC.
I think SEC is great.
Yeah, you're going to confuse our users. Stop that. It's a Securities Exchange Commission. We don't know what we don't know. We know there's a ton out there. Honestly, in my opinion, it would be better to educate people about what's going on versus things like privacy laws and these individual, or in addition to, definitely about this digital environment and how it impacts you and what's out there, because it is scary and a lot. The other one is, does it numb users? Do people who finds it relevant or changes or takes action based on these disclosures. People in our world are attuned to these, but not, as you say, you like to focus on SMBs and others. Do they understand this? Does this help them understand their exposure and their world?
One of the final questions for you. So your job as being attorney counsel for the weather company, who is ultimately responsible in your organization on accountability? Is it the CEO, or is it the guidance you give them to make sure that they're compliant, or is it the activities and practices of the organization?
It's cross-functional. There's a lot of different teams involved. So legal needs to be aware of what the legal requirements are. We work with a compliance team who helps understand how those are implemented in the business, as well as the engineering teams, because again, there's a lot of engineering in the apps that have to, or the sites, we call them the properties, user-facing engineering versus the back-end engineering. What data is shared with what vendors? We have vendors that work for us, our IT vendors, you know, part of our stack. Those are called service providers in California and processors under GDPR, but data may be shared with them. That's very different than sharing data with advertisers, which is shared in a variety of different ways. It might be our data. It might be data combined with third-party data. We're getting that broker system, but it's decisions on what direction we're going. Are we offering now health-related? If you want to know, are there allergens like pollen in your area? We know that for weather, but we can't tell you, because if you ask, that's considered health data now. So we can't tell you that right now. Under Washington State. So unless we want to carve out Washington State users and Nevada users. So right now that's going to be a problem. But so we're just not doing it. We don't have that set up. We can't tell you there's pollen in the area.
Because you're an information provider. If you stick to just providing information, then people can act on what they think about it. So you're not liable. You're just saying the pollen is high today. So you're just making them aware. You can't be told off or compliant, or you didn't say it was that high or it's lower or what X, Y, Z. You're giving a judgment call, even though weather company is the most accurate forecaster in the world. Better accuracy means better decisions, not without reading off the website. It's a twofold thing, isn't it?
Generalized. It is very twofold. We can provide generalized data, but if you express an interest in allergy triggers, we can tell generally by zip code level, we can tell you those things. There are allergens, but the more specific we get, the closer we get to health data, which is extremely broad. We are going to lean in that area. We just have to make sure we comply with the requirements. So again, it's what, to your point, who's responsible? And we have, it depends on which function, and we all work together and making sure that there are responsible departments or people or roles, because that's what matters.
Any weather forecast company that tries to tell us what the weather's going to be in the UK, since I've been talking to you, we've had fantastic, glorious weather. And as I look to the left, hail. Hail. And the reason why us Brits are so obsessed with the weather, we have so many westerlies, and then we have the Arctic weather, and then you get an easterly. It's a nightmare living here. The only reason I'm looking at the weather is that I'm thinking I'm going to have to go on Zwift again today and not go on the road.
I'm not going outside, and I'm in California, and for the same but opposite reasons. We're used to very nice weather here, and I'm used to it being perfect, and it's not, and it's like chilly outside. And the fun part of working where I do is I get to, whenever the weather reports, because they're always wrong, apparently I'm just not reading them correctly, but I get to call the weather guys and say, your contracts are on hold until you fix this, which is obviously a joke.
You went out yesterday morning, did 7.5 miles, partly cloudy, 15 degrees, 66% humidity, with a westerly wind and a wind speed of 10.1 mile an hour. And even though it was a temperature of 15 degrees yesterday, on your post-work decompress and fun with the ladies, hey, that's quite impressive, climbing that. It was actually felt like 14 degrees. So
14
For the listeners, Jennifer and I follow each other on Strava. She never gives me kudos. That's my biggest complaint about Jennifer Saunders. I always give her kudos.
Do I not give you kudos? I only check in once a week. You just collect
followers. You just collect,
I'm a privacy person. I don't like, I have to know you. I do not collect followers. I'm going to start doing that because I want to be an influencer. I'm not sure who I'm going to influence. We do, but that's a great example. Think of all the data Strava collects on you. They have a lot of data.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
They have your weight, your FTP, functional threshold power, your age, if you want to put that in. What else? Oh, they've got so much data and so much where you've been traveling.
It gets much better. That stuff you give them, they know something that's very sensitive under privacy laws is precise geolocation, and they have your precise geolocation. So they know where you are when, and that's actually a very valuable metric, and it's something that's highly scrutinized in privacy laws. And they can combine that with other data. They know who you're with, when.
Yeah. Who you've cycled past, flybys, which always amuses me. Who's been on that same hill today?
You know, what type of people are on that hill? Yeah. What kind of bikes your friends ride? What you ride? Actually, it's people put everything in Strava.
The only thing it didn't do on Saturday, we had such horrendous weather over here. We had hail and our legs were stinging because it was so cold, -4, was that there was only two cyclists out Saturday. And that was me and my buddy, because we were the only stupid idiots to go out. So I checked how many people went out on that day. It's just two of us. I thought, oh, God, yeah. Even my other half thought I was mad going out. So, which brings the call on privacy ad tech, because there's advertising. Is there advertising on Strava? I don't think there is. Oh, there is advertising on Strava, isn't there?
I don't look at it on the web. I look at it on my app, so not on my app.
I wonder who provides the weather forecast for Strava. We've got the weather forecast on Strava, so it shows one important part. Weather does play, as you say, the cheesy line on your website, better accuracy means better decisions, so it makes better decisions. I'd just like to thank your time for the podcast, What the Privacy. It's great having Jennifer on the line. I've been trying to talk to her for ages. She's a really, really busy person. And yeah, great to see you, Jennifer. And great actually on a screen as well. Thank you.
Thank you.